This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant and the Seattle Seahawks on the receiving end of an absolute gut punch last night in overtime. Seattle 6-4-1 under Russell Wilson in overtime games. Chris Carson suffered a midfoot sprain. Early indications from Bob Condotta, the Seattle Times, not believed to be serious. We'll ask the coach at 9:30. But right now, it's Brock Heward with Blue 42.
Here we go. This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Good morning, Brock. How are you now?
Good morning, Polly. Yes, gut punch, throat punch. Tough one. Tough one last night for the Seahawks. Kind of like the fun game that I got to call for the Falcons, too. Just a wild and wacky NFL weekend.
Yeah, someone said that the Falcons gradient jerseys from red to black sort of shows the history of the franchise where, yes, there are some red moments, but generally everything fades into the void of black. What a terrible, terrible way for them to lose on Sunday. Look, there were some terrible moments for the Seahawks on Sunday as well. And my question to you, Brock, as the quarterback in the room, did Russ play poorly last night, or were those just three careless throws that he threw interceptions on?
Well, yeah, you play poorly when you throw three interceptions, and he owned it post-game. I think, you know, just in following folks on the social media pathways that were talking to him and interviewing him, and I'm sure you guys have the sound, I think the consensus was, man, I have never heard Russ as hard on himself as he was after that game, because taking care of the football is priority one and always has been. I mean, his just governor for risk taking and putting the ball in harm's way is as good as anybody that has ever played in this league. And really, all three of those were so careless in that way. The first one, that the DK saves the day, and man, I would love to know the speed with which he was running. they are able to track those things. He had to be well over 21, 22 miles an hour catching Buda Baker. But that was just, you know, him, just careless. Careless is, I think, is the right word with it. Did not take care to see the safety and just floated it out there as if, you know, there was going to be nobody around. And you can't do that when you got, you know, fast ball-hawking guys like Patrick Peterson and Buda Baker. And the second was just a miscommunication. I'll be curious to see the coach's tape on that, because the TV copy, we did not get a good look of whether kind of DK was expecting a back shoulder throw there, or if Russell just airmailed it and overthrew him to Patrick Peterson. Yeah, and then the last one was just a miss. You know, Arizona had cranked it up, it turned up the heat exponentially there in the second half and overtime as far as pressure goes. Are they coming? Are they showing? Are they backing out of it? And yeah, it was an all out blitz, and he in his mind and anticipated it being that way, that he could float that ball. And yeah, those were three just so uncharacteristic throws. And I'm curious if you guys were to look and see how many, or see what Russell's record is. Danny, I think you've cited this a number of times. When the Seahawks defense has given up more than 400 yards passing, I think they're undefeated or some
correct
absurd number.
Yes.
I'm curious what Russell's numbers are when he throws it over 40 or 45 times. You know, that when he's got to throw it as much as he did, and without Chris Carson, they did not have that balance. 50 throws, 30 runs, you know, golly, that's not the number. That's not the ideal number to me. You can cook by being 55, 45, 50, you know, 7, 43, but you start going 50, 30, you have a risk of getting burned.
I felt like Seattle by overtime, their offense was scuffled. They
yes
scored one possession in the second half. I thought that last interception was basically Russ was at wit's end. He didn't know what to do. And
yep,
probably each of his last two, it's just him trying to make a play.
Arizona cranked it up. I mean, Arizona and Vance Johnson said, you know, in that first half, like, we're going to play zone. I don't trust the people around me. We're down another corner. We can't really rush the passer. I don't want to expose guys. And they just got gashed. I mean, we're going to give up I think on paper, the most yards, you know, if the Seahawks could have matched second half, first half production that had ever been achieved in the NFL. So you go into halftime and say, all right, you know, are we just here to survive or are we here to thrive? And it's the same sentiment I'm going to say to you about the Seahawk defense. I am tired of watching them sit there and just survive. And that's how Arizona played it the first 30 minutes. And you saw a very different game called, a very different mindset, a very different demeanor. And they said, the heck with it, man. If we're going to go down, we're going to go down swinging. And we're going to bring pressure and try to get to Russell Wilson and get in his passing lanes and disrupt his timing and rhythm. And they absolutely did.
Question two. I did feel that. Arizona, though, they've got a weird defense. I don't know how many other teams have that many interchangeable parts that they'll be able to put seven guys on the line of scrimmage. You don't know who will be dropping back. Of those three interceptions we've talked about, Brock, which one's going to bother Pete Carroll most?
Oh, the last one. Oh, no question. Yeah, no question. The first one, you know, they don't even score. Your defense just rises up. You know, incredible goal line stand there. Right, and then I think you drive it down and go down and score. So that one is flush. That one is erased. That one's done. The second one to DK was just, I think, miscommunication between the two. They never showed a TV replay of it. The coach's tape isn't out yet. I think that one was just a very rare miscommunication between Russ and DK. There is no question it's the last one. You've got the ball. You've crossed midfield. There's less than 2 minutes to go. You should win or tie. There is no way you lose that game last night. You know, with a minute 40 to go in overtime, it's first and 10 at the Arizona 48-yard line. And, you know, you're literally 10 yards, you know, 13 yards within field goal range, and you don't lose that game. So in the fact that you were careless with the ball in that situation, that's the one that's going to sting the most.
What do you think he saw there?
He was anticipating all those guys coming, and he was going to throw a hot to Tyler. And he was just going to hit him in the seam, try to hit him on the run and get going. And unfortunately, that was just, as Danny said, they just messed with the mechanism and the entire timing of it. And Russ thought they were going to drop or they were going to come as they had previously when DJ Dallas did not pick up the blitzer, and he took one right on the chin as hard as you can get hit, Russell. So I think he anticipated that same look based on the alignment of the safeties and just the flatness of it all. And, man, what a tremendous disguise, a tremendous bluff, and the biggest play yet of that young rookie's career in Arizona, who's going to be, by the way, a monster to deal with for years to come. Isaiah Simmons is finding his footing, and that guy is going to be just a pterodactyl of just nastiness.
He played five snaps last night, and that was one
yes.
of them. The best example of what happened to Seattle in the overtime is the third and five on their first possession. They ended up punting after it. Russell takes a sack. Yep. He looked to try and throw to Tyler Lockett. Seattle shifted all its protection to the left side of the line. The pressure came from the right side, and those guys that they designed to pick up that they thought were blitzing dropped back in coverage, and one of those guys covered up Tyler, and that's why he couldn't go there.
It's one of the challenges when you kind of get into this empty or four wides and in shotgun stuff, you try to, with that scheme that Arizona was playing where they're putting everybody at the line, right? They put the linebacker, safety, people all at the line. Okay, what are we going to do here? You call it slide protection. You're going to slide to the left. You're going to slide to the right. You don't have a ton of other options. So you'll hear teams all the time say Laser or Larry or any L word or Ringo or
Lewis. Right,
and that, yes, Lewis.
Lefty.
You're going to slide to the left. You're going to slide to the right. And then that back is going to be hopefully capable of scanning whatever is left. And if you were wrong, you know, at least get a piece of somebody, and keep the guy farthest outside away from you. Make him go around, and maybe Russell can create if they mess up that slide or they guess wrong. And unfortunately, I don't know what DJ Dallas was doing. I don't know if he didn't hear the call as they slid, because he did what you can't do, which is what a lot of rookies do. He was indecisive. And when you block nobody, you risk getting your quarterback killed.
No more Travis Homer criticism. That's what I've decided. There's two things. We can't bring up the play where DK Metcalf eased up against Dallas and gets caught at the goal line. And what he did to Buda Baker, we just can't mention it anymore. No more Travis Homer complaints is the second one, because Travis Homer picks up that blitz.
Yes. Yes. Did he get nicked up or something? Or was
knee contusion.
Golly.
We got Chris Carson with a midfoot sprain. He's getting an MRI, according to Schefter. And we got knee contusion for Travis Homer.
Not good.
I'd still like less handoffs to him, but...
Shut it, Paul!
Question three. All right, Danny, you're a three. I'm a 2.63, rounding up from a 2.6285.
Oh.
Brock, what's your level of panic after this one, 1 to 10?
I was hoping that was not your Uber rating score.
Oh, no, I'm a 4.85.
4.85 on
yes.
The Uber scale. Okay. Danny, do you know what your Uber rating scale is?
I don't take Uber.
Oh, you're not an Uber guy?
I'm not an Uber guy.
I live in the city. I take the subway.
Oh, I ride my bike, man.
Oh. You know what? That's impressive.
I'm a 4.86 right now.
Oh.
Darn it. I'm down a little bit. Yeah.
What's your panic meter for the Seahawks?
My panic meter is, I'm going to say about right there, 4.86.
Really?
4.8. Yeah, maybe
4.9. That's mid. Very mid. Solidly mid.
It's very solidly mid. This defense, I'm going to hold a little judgment until I watch the tape today, but I think I'm ready to unleash the beast tomorrow.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's hard to watch.
You're going to say stop cooking, aren't you?
No, not necessarily. I said defense, not necessarily offense.
Okay.
Defense, but I think they do relate. And Danny, I think your article a week ago or two was spot on. The Pete is watching all of this and taking it all in. And, you know, when it's fourth and two, I'm absolutely going for it. I'm not kicking the field goal to go up six because I don't trust what I've got defensively. So you've seen that in play, and you wrote about it, you know, in the first 3, 4, 5 weeks of the season, and that will probably continue to be in play. So as far as cooking goes in that regard and game management, that's not going to change. But, man, it's difficult to watch. And I think some of it's because we are so conditioned for so many years of watching a dominant defense and just one that just – you know, okay, if you're going to score, it's going to hurt and it's going to be painful and you're going to have to earn it. And just watching so many, Kyler Murray was just having a ball back there. Oh, I'm not going to, he didn't get hit, not one QB hit or one sack. I'll say that again. On the stat sheet, at least last night when that game ended, and I looked at all the defensive numbers and they measure QB hits and sacks. He obviously got hit when he scrambled and they had designed QB runs. But as far as when he dropped back to pass, and I believe it still stands, you can correct me if I'm wrong, 0 QB hits, 0 sacks.
I'll go a little further for you, Brock. Next Gen Stats tweeted, Murray was pressured on just 1 of 48 dropbacks, 2.1 pressure rate. It's the lowest pressure rate against any quarterback in a game this season with at least 14 passing attempts.
So the mindset was, you know, a little bit they used what the Detroit Lions did to Kyler Murray. When the Lions beat Kyler Murray and picked him off 3 times, they're going to put a little spy, not just at the linebacker spot, but we're going to kind of move him around. And you saw Shaquem Griffin be that guy. And they tried to implement a bunch of what Detroit did with some of their zones and otherwise and spy. And that's all fine and dandy. But, you know, those guys that do rush have to impact the pocket, and they can't. And you heard Collinsworth say that in the open of the show. You know, as beautiful as Russell has played and this offense is electric, man, you know, when you're imbalanced and hit in the imbalance of the Seahawks team is you can't affect the quarterback, you don't win championships usually. That's not a recipe for championships in this league, right? When the teams and the prolific offenses, Kansas City won it a year ago, guess what they could do? They could impact the quarterback. Drew Brees, when the Saints won it, guess what they could do? They could impact the quarterback. They could rush the quarterback. They did some things well. And, man, when you don't hit, harass, or hurry, and especially that little guy, that's a guy that you can force into mistakes. And they get the one pick. The one time that pocket kind of squeezed a little bit, and he threw off his back foot late down the middle, and Quandre gets the interception. Geesh, I just, Arizona finally said enough. Enough's enough. We're not going to play the game this way. We're going to try to get to Russell. And the Seahawks just never went that route. And it was unfortunate in the end.
That is Blue 42. Brock Hewitt joins us. It is sponsored by Frost Brewed Coors Light. It's an interesting question. I do find myself wondering how much that will change with Jamal Adams coming back. But when you're relying on a safety to be able to either rush the passer or provide you the security to rush the passer without thinking you're going to get burnt deep,
yes.
That probably is a commentary on the difficulty that your pass rush faces. It was, as Collinsworth said it last night, if Seattle doesn't make the Super Bowl, he said it's going to be because they're not able to rush the passer.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, you also kind of at times help that rush by bringing five or six. They don't do that particularly well. You know, that's not necessarily the forte of some of those linebackers. May it be with Jordan Brooks as he gets some footing, and he flashed some nice speed yesterday.
Oh, that goal line play?
Yo, that was awesome.
Welcome to the NFL.
Awesome.
Oh, 71 is assigned to get to him. He didn't even come close. He didn't even sniff Jordan Brooks.
No chance. So this will be, I am anxious. I think it will come out tonight. This will be some of the coach's tape that I am most anxious to watch, because, you know, this, not only because I have the Seahawks in 13 days or whatever in Buffalo, but I want to really see what in the world they're doing coverage wise. Because Kyler Murray, the week before, was completed like 37% of his passes. He's turned the ball over. He has intercepted. Teams have got him out of rhythm. And they allowed him to play that game, as you said, Paul, in a way that no other quarterback in the league has this year. Just as comfortable as could be in that pocket. And that's difficult.
Brock, we always love talking to you. Apparently, you're sufficient motivation for one Matt Patricia. If you keep calling their games, the Lions might make the playoffs. And other thing, I thought of you yesterday.
You did.
Falcons were wearing those red uniforms. The Detroit Lions were in a very, very metallic shade of gray. How was your color blindness?
It was okay. Yeah, it ended up being okay. Yes, that was a light enough, and there was a much different. You know, there was enough differentiation between those colors that it didn't get me. Yeah, it's the blues and purples, greens and browns, some of the reds and oranges that I run into real trouble. Gray, that's kind of, even though I usually live a little more black and white, I'm not necessarily in the gray. I could handle that one yesterday.
What's the worst game you've ever called for your color blindness?
You know, I've not ever called a game where I've had an issue other than numbers. Golly, I forget which game. There was a game I had no chance. It was like a grade sheet, NC, no chance. And it was just there was no differentiation of the college team's jersey to their numbers for me in my color blindness. So I had, that was a struggle to say the least.
Were you able to watch successfully that Jets Bills game where it was all green, all red?
That was the one too. Yeah. That's where, you know, the color blindness community all came to an outrage,
and we ended
some of that. So
they were never going to do that again. No. Brock, we love talking to you. We're going to hear your fired up take on the defense tomorrow.
Yes, you will. Be well.
Thanks, Brock.
That is Brock Huard with us for Blue 42. Here's the one. People need to toughen up a little bit about this. And this goes out to the whole, oh, my God, I can't believe this happened. And it's a minority because we took our panic meter reading. The panic meter from the text on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line came out to an average of 3.5. So that's very solidly rational. But there are some people on there that are 8, 9, 10. One guy put 110 because he said he wanted to rebuild. Yeah,
rebuild. Oh my god!
But there is sort of the overreaction that happens. The one thing I want to say is this is the underside of letting Russ cook. This is the other thing that can happen. Seattle. This is the first time they had won their past 41 games in which they had a double-digit lead at halftime. It was the longest active streak in the NFL. And the reason that they had the longest streak in the active streak in the NFL is because of how they play, because they run the ball so often, because they weren't aggressive in the first half, which meant if they were up double digits at halftime, they were really kicking somebody's butt. And there was going to be no chance for them coming back because of how Seattle played. Seattle now plays more similarly to the rest of the league. They throw more often on first and second down. And they're also prone to going in offensive slumps. So a double-digit halftime lead is not going to be as secure as it was 2 years ago. I think this is the right style for them to play. I have no qualms about saying that. And I'm more close to saying, hey, they should never punt than to say that they should try and be a more balanced offense. They're playing the style that suits them. People need to toughen up, though.
When they stall offensively, how are you supposed to rationalize that, though? What am I supposed to say if in the second half the Seahawks can't move the football at all, which happened in this past game? And there's been a couple of moments of that this year. You can't expect the team to score on every single drive in the NFL, but that's kind of the standard they've set for themselves, where going into this game they were scoring red zone touchdowns at, what, a 90% clip?
Yes. And what you need to do is when the offense starts to stall out, you need to find what's going wrong and fix it quicker. In this game, they needed to fix quicker. They needed to adjust to pressure. They needed to handle Arizona's blitzing and the way that Arizona was playing better than they did. Because really, their final, I won't count the last drive that they had in regulation because they're trying to run out the clock and it was three running plays. But really, pretty consistently over certainly the final, from about the midpoint of the third quarter on, Seattle had a really hard time understanding and anticipating where pressure was coming from.
And it feels like the easy solution to that is screens. And I know the Seahawks aren't great at them, but we have seen some moments where they were capable. And the DK Metcalf touchdown was on a screen. They maybe should have gone to that a little bit earlier. And who knows what happens if David Moore, by the way, doesn't hold that guy. I really want to see what DK Metcalf would have done to that random defender. Would he have bounced off of him? Would he have still gotten the first down? Would he have still just blown through him for that touchdown? But finding ways, I think, also to get DK the ball in this one, that was tough. And, you know, I would have to go back to the film, I guess, to figure it out. And we can ask Pete about it, of course, when he joins us this morning at 9:30. But, man, he was invisible for a lot of the game. And I felt like that's one of those guys that you want to find ways to force him to football, even if Lockett's playing awesome.
You do. I view it as the two of them together. I honestly think if a team is doing something to take one of those guys away and you're getting, I mean, Tyler Lockett matched the franchise record with 15 catches. Like that matches the franchise record that Steve Largent set back in 1987. I didn't have a problem with the production they got from their wide receivers. I think the issue became they were not anticipating where the pressure was coming from and who was dropping into coverage. And that certainly happened on that final interception. That is purely a product of that. Russell didn't realize that that was Isaiah Simmons and he was going to be able to drop back into coverage like he did and swoop up with that big bear paw and grab the ball the way he did.
Isn't that a little concerning, though? We're so used to Russ being able to diagnose a defense at the line of scrimmage.
Yes, but that's the answer. The answer of how do they get out when they start to stall is to become better at adjusting to that, to become a greater understanding. Should help. Ethan Posick is still in his first year as a starting center, so this experience should help him get better. I also think that there aren't many defenses that have the personnel that Arizona has in their ability to put seven guys on the line of scrimmage and you're not sure who's blitzing and who's dropping into coverage.
That's true. But again, we're talking about a Vance Joseph defense. I'm sorry. Vance Joseph's a terrible defensive coordinator. He always has been. And Chandler Jones as a pass rusher is missing in this game. You know, the flummoxes that they put you through in the second half, I wonder what Brian Schottenheimer is going to do to adjust next week.
We saw Chandler Jones destroy Seattle last December, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like
four
he
sacks.
Just ate up. Yeah, Dwayne Brown's not there. Jamarco Jones is playing left tackle, and Chandler Jones. That was much more concerning than this. That was much more concerning because that was one dude just taking your offensive line to town and wrecking your game plan. This was mental mistakes. This was a mental inability to understand where pressure was coming from and who was dropping into. I'd much rather get beat by something that you can adjust to strategically than being physically whooped by a mismatch.
I understand that line of thinking, but I'll also take a look at, you know, in that game against Chandler Jones, they had a lot of injuries on the offensive line.
That's true, too.
So, I mean, he was eating up an offensive line that was banged up. And this one, again, I'm not going to act like the sky is falling with this offense. We know how good it is, and we know how quickly it can score. But there are now two back-to-back games with a bye week in between where, for a half, their offense has had a really tough time getting anything going, and also a fallback on an old habit. I really feel like when it's the fourth quarter and you got a couple of minutes left, but you're only up by 3 points, running the ball with Carlos Hyde four plays in a row, when you got Russell Wilson, that was a mistake.
It is Danny Gallant, probably the one play that jumped out the most. Pete Carroll called it one of the best football plays that he's ever seen. Should not be forgotten in everything that happened. We'll talk about DK playing catch up next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
First and goal. Russell takes a shotgun snap. Carson, oh no! It's picked off, going the other way. Is Buda Baker down the near sidelines? Nobody's going to catch him unless Metcalf can. He is sprinting. He is running. He dives and he catches him. DK Metcalf catches Buda Baker on a little dump pass into the right flat. Russell never saw him, and he steals the ball away.
first of what turned out to be three interceptions. Could have been backbreaking, except, well, it kind of seemed like it rallied Seattle, because not only did DK Metcalf run down Buda Baker in one of the more extraordinary individual efforts you're ever going to see in a football game, but then the defense bowed up, stopped him on four plays, and forced a turnover on downs in what was probably the highlight for Seattle's defense in this game.
This game doesn't even get to overtime if not for DK Metcalf and the defense that stood up right afterwards. And I can't say enough good things about DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. I love these two with a passion that is hard to describe. I just love the effort that DK puts into every single thing that he does, whether or not it's running routes. He's not a guy that's just going to run routes and that's all he does, like we've seen from Randy Moss and other all-time greats in the past. He wants to block people. He wants to hit people. And that chase down, I don't know if it's, Danny, something that happened because of what happened to him against Dallas, but that was one of the most impressive hustle plays that I've seen over the last 20 years. The only one that I can think of that comes to mind was when Ben Watson in the division, I think it was the divisional playoffs of 2005, Patriots Broncos ran down Champ Bailey at the 1 yard line, hit him out of bounds. That was an incredible chase down. And my God, that guy is just a freak athlete. To see him gain ground, it was like a 12th grader catching up on a 4 year old who was playing a Pee Wee football game.
What? I mean, look, he ran down a dude that weighs 50 pounds less than him. And Buda Baker, it should be, Russell was careless with the ball. He lobbed that. And he should have put more mustard on it. At the same time, I do want to give Buda Baker diagnosed what was going on, and he made a beeline for it. Like, there was zero hesitation. He recognized what was happening, and he made a decision. He went for it. He made a hell of a play.
He's one of the best safeties in the NFL, and really, we saw it on Monday night, too, a little bit more of it against the Cowboys. But, yeah, that was a heck of a play still. Russ just lobbed that one towards the sideline, and a guy like Buda Baker, you got to know about his presence.
Yeah, go Dogs, Buda Baker. I do.
There it is.
I also want to say, there is a lot of fake hustle that you'll see in professional athletics. And I think it's one. I think I have a pretty, I like to pay attention to it because I think it can be telling about guys who are either overly emotional.
Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah. I think that Odell Beckham Jr., people who want to show you how much they care as opposed to people who actually care that much. What DK Metcalf did was one of those things where I'm going to give every ounce of energy I have to try and make a play for my team. It wasn't his fault that it happened. It wasn't his. And the best contrast that I can think of to make is that in the Thursday night game when Daniel Jones inexplicably, when there was too much car for the driver and Daniel Jones tripped. If you watch that play, number 31 from the Eagles stops. Like, he starts coasting. He is not going as hard as he can. And what he realizes in his head is he's probably not going to catch the guy. And I think there's part of him that doesn't want to be in the frame. Like, I honestly think that there's part of him of like, this wasn't my bad. I don't want to be the guy that looks like they're responsible for this. Instead of giving every ounce of energy he had. Now, fortunately for the Eagles, Daniel Jones can't run. And you contrast that with what DK Metcalf did. And it was awesome. And I really do mean this. Like, I'm never going to bring up the mistake he made against Dallas again because I truly don't think anything like that will ever happen again. And the reason why is because of the effort that he showed. DK Metcalf really cares about doing everything he can for his team.
Yeah, that was something that I think also the rest of the team sees that, and that's an expectation. If you're not doing that, then sit down. Get on the bench. And that is a high standard that everyone's going to be held to. I mean, I imagine they will watch this a couple of times when they study film today. Pete said this was one of the most impressive physical feats of effort that he has ever seen. And it really was. I mean, I still can't believe that he caught up to him that quickly. You didn't even see him on the screen at first. And Buda is a fast guy, too. I think someone texted that he ran a 10.7. Is that, I'm guessing, 100 meter in high school? Like, that's pretty impressive. Like, Buda's a fast guy. The fear and terror that must have been in his heart as he turned around for that 1 second and saw DK, I'm almost curious as to why he even turned around to begin with. But it's a good thing he
Buda?
Did, probably. Yeah.
No, he looked up. He was looking up at
the screen. Saw him on the scoreboard? Okay.
He saw him on the scoreboard. He's using it as a rearview mirror. Here's Pete Carroll after the game talking about DK Metcalf's effort.
Yeah, it was one of the best football plays I've ever seen. It was just remarkable. You saw him realize what was happening, the opportunity, and he just used all that marvelous skill that he had and the will to go run the guy down. And it was such an incredible play because of what happened afterwards. The defense followed and rallied, got out of there in four downs and took the ball off him. Offense goes 96 yards with a drive and scores it. I just think that it was an inspiring play. Nobody could miss it.
Do you believe that inspired the defense? We talked about momentum and we talk about all these different things. Do you think that correlated with what we saw from Seattle's defense?
I do think that the defense perhaps found a little more pep in their step in that spot. And I'm also curious as to Arizona's approach. I felt like the way that they were attacking the Seahawks defense in that spot maybe wasn't the best way to go about doing it. I felt like finding better ways to get Kyler Murray in space. But then again, I mean, Jordan Brooks just made a great play on that left sideline, tracking them down. Yeah, I could buy into that theory. It's hard to put that like an actual number on that or to prove that the defense was playing better because of what DK had done. But they didn't have the ability to do it unless DK makes the play that he did. And for whatever reason, fourth down situations with goal to go, these Seahawks have been lights out this year.
They've been really good in those sets. They ran out of a little bit. They couldn't get them to fourth downs. Maybe that was the problem in the second half, that they're really good once they get them to fourth downs, but they couldn't even do that in Seattle. That question of sort of how much inspiration can be drawn from it in those, I'll be interested to see how Seattle bounces back from this, because there certainly are things that they can feel really good about. The offensive efficiency in the first half, Seattle was an absolute buzzsaw. Scores on five of six possessions, 377 yards of total offense. That interception was the only time, the only drive that Seattle didn't score, and they were in a first down goal-to-goal situation. And even after the game, they end up losing. Russell Wilson was probably as bluntly critical of his own performance as I've ever heard. He threw for 388 yards, but clearly the three interceptions weighed pretty heavily on him.
Yeah, I mean, I thought we played a great game except for those three plays, I mean, honestly, and those were my fault. So, you know, there's so much that we can do, and we have so much confidence. Our confidence is not going to waver. They're a great football team, too, and we knew it was going to be a battle. It always is down here and whenever we play. You know, nothing really changes except for the fact that we just have to tighten up some things. I have to be better, which I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to playing the next game. I wish we could play tomorrow. And that's just that's just our mentality, and we'll be back stronger. We'll be better.
That's the great thing about Russ, is he's not going to blame other people for it. And they were all his fault. There's no spin zone, I think, on any of them. Even with the throw in the end zone to DK Metcalf, I felt like that was one of those YOLO balls. And I can understand why DK might have slowed down a little bit, because it didn't really look like he was open. You know, it's one thing if Russ is scrambling around and he's open. It's another thing entirely if it's one-on-one with Patrick Peterson.
If I understood what Russell said after the game, they were in a scramble mode at that point, and they've got certain rules that they follow. And I think that Russell read one of the things that DK Metcalf was doing as he was going to spin and run deep. And that's not what Metcalf did. That it was basically Russ responded to what he thought was a cue from DK, and it wasn't really. But you're right. He decided to put a ball up and let his guy make a play. And when you're extending the play and taking a chance like that, the other two were pretty clearly, Russell made a decision and it ended up backfiring on him. The question of how a team responds to a loss, I think is an important one, because you do see teams that cave in or teams that are profoundly affected. I think Atlanta's season was wrecked the moment they lost that lead to Dallas. I think it was done the moment that they lost that lead to Dallas. And I think there are teams, I don't feel that way about this game at all. I don't feel that way in part because of the quarterback, but I will say that Russell is usually not, he tries to flush bad plays or bad decisions out and not dwell on them. And I think in some cases that's maybe rubbed teammates the wrong way, or they felt that, hey, you don't stand up and say enough, my bad. And that was probably as bluntly self-critical as I've heard Russell Wilson.
And look, he did do that after the game. I think everyone realizes that when you make a mistake, that generally the player is going to be very upset with himself for making said mistake. I would say that it's also good to hear that, because you want less of these. This has been his biggest problem this year. The interceptions he has thrown have been careless. I think every single one of them. I outside of maybe the Greg Olsen tipped pass that was returned for a touchdown by New England, they've all been rather careless, and three of them have come in the end zone.
Yeah. Can't make a counterpunch to that. They have been on him. It is Danny and Gallant. Should the Seahawks ever punt? Legitimate question. We'll talk game management decisions next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
There were a couple of moments in this one, Danny, that I, at the very least, thought to myself, was that the right call? I'm going to start specifically with something that I know you've talked about a little bit, a situation where the Seahawks could have been more aggressive. It's the third quarter. It's 4th and 5 at Arizona's 46. You're in this weird gray area where you're definitely not in field goal range, and you would definitely give Arizona a very good field position if you fail for it, going for it on 4th down. The Seahawks chose to punt. The Cardinals marched down the field on a long 12-play touchdown drive afterwards.
Yeah, I didn't think about this as a potential spot where they could have been more aggressive. At the time, it seemed like a slam dunk to me. You forced a 3-and-out on Arizona to start the half. You had some things going on the drive, but it had kind of petered out about midfield. You're up 10. I thought it was the right decision to punt. It didn't occur to me to say, hey, here's where you need to go for it. I do think that there is some legitimacy and some reason to reevaluate some of Seattle's decision-making going forward. And I'm not quite on the hashtag never punt bandwagon of saying that this team should never punt, but I do think that they should err on the side of being more aggressive. That just didn't strike me as the time to do it. Up 10, having forced a 3-and-out to start the second half, you really didn't know what was coming from Arizona. Your defense wasn't in full free fall yet.
What's tricky is that Michael Dixon is a great punter, if not the best in the league this year, and he is going to get it inside the 10 every single time. But how much of an advantage does this Seahawks defense have when it has pinned the opposition back behind, right in front of its own goalpost? Because 12-play, 93-yard touchdown drive right after that punt, which was a great punt.
Field position doesn't matter as much for this team. Like that, you're 100% right. And that is going to go against Pete's very basic instincts. Field position doesn't matter as much. Having an extra 40 yards basically is taking more time for the opponent to score. Field position does not matter as much. And so when we talk about going forward, I can see in retrospect, looking back at that, the other one is 4th and 2 after Carlos Hyde was stopped for no gain with just over a minute to go. Do you go for it there as well? I think you do. I think you punt it. I don't, there wasn't one decision in this game that I thought was the wrong situational decision by Seattle. But afterward, going back and looking at it, I think it's fair to ask the question about whether or not Seattle should be more reticent to punt, just given the fact that field position isn't as valuable. I don't think they made any wrong decisions here, though.
I think that situation, you can make a strong case either way, but I would have, I think, gone for it on that 4th and 5. Pete was asked about a 4th and 2 late in the game, which I'm not sure why this one was something that was in question. They're on their own 34-yard line. This is after 4 straight Carlos Hyde carries. Here's Pete being asked about it.
Pete, on your last possession of regulation, you guys got a 1st down, and then you stalled at midfield and you punted. Was there much thought at that 4th and 2 to go for it?
Not right there, no.
And I'm wondering if maybe the question confused the situations, whether he was thinking about that midfield situation and instead talked about the 4th and 2. But the odds of going for it 4th and 2 at your own 34 when you're only up 3 points, that's crazy. No matter who you have on under center,
you're giving them the game tying field goal if you don't get it. You're basically saying we're going to concede, and not only that, we're going to give you multiple shots at the end zone.
Right. If it's a touchdown game, I can almost understand it. But field goal, you're giving the opposition with your defense just a golden opportunity to move down the field. But a lot of people would have said the same thing with that infamous Bill Belichick going for it on 4th and 2 on his own side of the field against the Indianapolis Colts with the lead.
That's Peyton Manning, though, right? Like, that's Peyton Manning's on the other side.
Is Peyton Manning and this defense, are these the same things right now? You laugh, but
peak Peyton Manning equals any decent quarterback playing this Seattle defense.
Yeah.
Saying. I mean, Look, I watched Cam Newton get absolutely wrecked by an injury-ravaged 49er team, and I think back to how Cam Newton looked against this defense. It's not an absurd point.
I don't know how I feel about it. Now I'm talking myself out of the opinion that I initially had. Like, it's fourth and two at your own 34, but you know the limitations of this defense. Do you know how likely you are to convert it on that fourth and two? Honestly, with the plays that you had run, the run carries to Carlos Hyde, specifically a stretch play to the side, that felt like you were already in this mindset of, okay, we're going to run clock. We think we'll get the first down, and it's unlikely that Arizona's going to be able to drive down the field. And you can't think that way anymore.
I don't know, man. You got to. They get the ball back with what, like a minute? It was just under 2 minutes to go, and they run three straight plays. They bleed their last two timeouts, and then you've got about a minute 40 left, and you snap the ball. If you have an incomplete pass, I mean, you're basically taking half the clock, almost half the clock away by running on that third and two. I think it's the right call. I think it's the right call, even with the shift, everything. You can bleed half the clock off. And if you get it, the game's over. If you don't get it, you're giving them the ball back with half as much time as you would if you failed on the conversion, if you throw it on third and two. I think that's the right one. I also want to say I loved the decision to go for it on fourth and two from the three.
I was surprised that they did, to be honest. And I'm not even sure I like the play call, even though it worked out so well, because I can't believe that Lockett got his feet down.
Yeah, it was an incredible catch.
Unbelievable.
My basic rule is I'll question the decision to go for it. I'm not going to question the architecture of the play.
Okay.
Unless it's, hey, Ronnie, they made the decision to go for it. Here's what I loved about the decision to go for it. If you kick the field goal there, you go up six. You force the opponent to go for a touchdown at that point. You take off the idea that, hey, we can just settle for a field goal. Because if you don't get it there, you turn the ball over to them deep. I actually think that the opponent is less likely to be aggressive in going for the end zone. You increase the chance that you can lose. If you end up going up six, you increase the chance that you can lose, because if you're only up three, I think the opponent is more likely to play it conservative. I think they're more likely to, if we get it in field goal range, we're not going to take any chances. We're not going to get greedy. We'll just send it to overtime. I really like the idea of, okay, we're going to go and try and put the spike in it right now and go up 10 points. And if we don't get it, I don't think we sacrifice that much, because I think the other team might still be inclined to play it more safe and just settle for overtime rather than trying to drive the dagger through our heart. I loved that call.
It was one with a lot of chutzpah. It was such a low percentage play. I remember seeing it unfold, and I just thought to myself, what? Wow, Russ is just throwing this straight up in the air. Lockett is so good. How many receivers are better than him as far as spatial awareness of the sidelines? Because this is now 2 years in a row where he has made a catch with his toes down on the sideline, and I don't know how he had the space to even get both of them down.
There is not a more efficient deep connection in this league than Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett. Just not. And for all of the talks, you remember when it was third and short, and they ended up throwing a go ball because it was up there, and you're like, yeah, you only needed a couple yards there. Maybe
against
not
the Patriots.
Not go for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have iced it against the Patriots. That's why you can't object to it, because they're awesome.
Yeah. Look at the one-handed catch that Lockett made on what? The first play from scrimmage?
Gets jammed at the line of scrimmage. He was absolutely fantastic. The other thing on that final series in regulation for Seattle, where they don't get the third and two, how worried are you about Chris Carson's foot? He didn't play in the second half. He had a midfoot sprain. He's having an MRI taken. If Carson is there, I think Carlos Hyde played pretty well. I think that Chris Carson is a different level of back than Carlos
Carson
Hyde.
Was running really well last night, too. And they weren't using him a lot, but I was under the impression that if the Seahawks do get a lead, they're just going to unleash a lot of Carson in the second half, because Arizona didn't want any of him. He was dragging guys around. And, yeah, I'm with you. If Carson's there, it's better. But guess what? He's not there again, and now you have to – now you have to fester with this decision. What do you do? Because he's great when he's healthy, but he's not always healthy. It's Danny and Gallant. He is Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant right here, 710 ESPN Seattle. Michael Bumpus is going to join us to share his thoughts on the Seahawks' first loss of the season last night, 37-34 in overtime to the Cardinals. And your thoughts as well on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Don't go anywhere.